In the beginning, Ibiza's ancient wells were sacred places of fertility, life and renewal, temples to the moon goddess Tanit. But slowly the people started forgetting, and the more they worshipped the god of the sun, the more the wells began to dry. You're listening to The Wells of Tanit, a podcast celebrating the folklore, mythology, history and ecology of the island of Ibiza. My name is Joanna Ruby. I'm an artist and puppeteer and the founder of Theatre of the Ancients, and we're about to journey together to one of Ibiza's wells to see what stories it has to tell us. Don't be afraid, take my hand, and let's go and find the Wells of Tanit. It was a forgotten emerald pool near San Carlos, with fruit trees beneath, where the well drinkers came. He played the music of the island's hidden waters, and by the summer's end, when he had gone, I was in. Hello, friend, it's been such a long time since I last spoke to you. I've just shared with you some words from my poetry book, When I Was Furthest from Water, published by Hedgespoken Press in Devon, England. Words which were directly inspired by the magical place where I sit this afternoon talking to you. The bees are buzzing around me, the birds are singing, a cockerel crows in the distance. The sky is so blue, and the stone around me is so yellow and warm. I'm at the home of the mythical emerald green pool. I'm at the Font de Atzaro. It would be an understatement to call it a well, because it is actually a hydraulic centre of water at the mouthway to the Morna Valley near San Carlos. Apparently there's an old Ibicenco saying about the Morna Valley which goes, "Chi va a Morna non torna." They who go to the Morna Valley will not return. So if I were to take you on a little guide around this water hub of the Font de Atzaro, I would start at the well, removing the heavy stone, keeping the metallic door shut tight. You pull the door open and walk down the steps to the well at the bottom. When I lived nearer to this well a couple of years ago, I would come here and find a glass tankard on the bottom step of this well, going to show the local law that this water is supposed to be one of the cleanest and most beautiful to drink of the area. And coming out of the well, we could walk down towards the valley underneath, and we come to a washing area, of which there are supposedly very few on the island, perhaps three. Big stones set into the middle of it for washing clothes, and a lovely seating area around it, which you can imagine would have provided a nice little bit of shade surrounded by this lovely warm stone. And that's exactly where I'm sitting now. But if you carry on a little further down from the washing area, you come to the emerald green pool itself, which locally is called a safaredj, from which there are stone channels which lead down into the valley below where there are fruit trees. Traditionally, wheat and cereals, olives, carob, almonds and figs were grown, and the water fed the different neighbours' plots with a very sophisticated rotation system based on the Arabic structure that had been put in place centuries before. But I have to say, this is the first time I've been to the Font de Atzaro since I heard a very disturbing story. Last winter, in the throes of coronavirus, I read in the local paper that the Font de Atzaro spring was drying up for no clear reason, and it was deeply troubling the neighbours of this area who had never in all of their many years seen the waters go down, not even in times of severe drought. So it's my first time back here since I heard that news, and to be honest, I was very nervous coming here. And as much as I would love to tell you whether the water has returned to the spring or not, I think I will save that surprise until the end, because in the meantime we have a little journey to go on together. So today, our theme is bread. I'm exploring that substance known around the world as the very building block of human subsistence. that everyday necessity, something intrinsic to our livelihood. So much so that in recent centuries, the term bread became synonymous with money. Dough, they call it in American gangster films. And so maybe it's fitting that we're exploring the idea of bread in these times of huge economic, social and cultural shifts, when I suppose many of us are kind of trying to redefine what bread and butter exactly is, and perhaps embracing new ways of subsisting and supporting ourselves. Maybe on that note, I would really like to introduce you to something which I have created since I last spoke to you in these podcasts. I now have a new Patreon community, which is an online realm used by many different types of creatives, where you can come with me much, much deeper into this world of Ibiza's myths and folklore and culture. And at the same time, you can help support this podcast and also my other artistic projects, which I do via Theatre of the Ancients on Ibiza. So you can join me on Patreon by paying a monthly fee starting at €1 for my monthly newsletter blog. And it allows you to access a whole realm of exclusive offerings from me. I'll be sharing with you my personal creative process as an artist on Ibiza, sharing my ideas, my reflections, my dreams. On another pricing level, I'm also offering monthly translations from local Ibizan writers and journalists, so that if your Spanish is not quite up to the standard to be able to read local literature that really takes you to the heart of this island's rich and very kind of well-hidden culture, then I can help you to do it. As well as monthly poetry, creative writing, videos taking you behind the scenes of my artistic work, gift bundles of my handmade books, zines, art objects. And finally, and perhaps most importantly to you listeners to this podcast, my patrons receive a bonus post every time I launch a new podcast episode. And this will give you a whole realm of special material to accompany the episode, including links for further reading, videos, and also the original audio of any interviews that I do in Spanish, so that you can listen to the original version whilst also reading the English translation, which I will include as well, allowing you to really get to know these characters that I interview and have a real immersion into the Spanish language at the same time. So if you're interested in joining my Patreon community, head to patreon.com and type my full name into the search bar. That's Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, Ruby, spelt H-R-U-B-Y. Or you can find all of this information in the text that will accompany this episode and also on my Worlds of Tanit social media. In an article from the local Ibizan newspaper, Diario de Ibiza, there was an article recently called When Bread Was Sacred on Ibiza by Miguel Ángel González. And in it, he wrote that in the Ibiza of the 1950s, traces remained of the sacred role that bread played in the old world. It's also interesting to note that bread is mentioned at least 492 times in the Bible, apparently, including the following quote from Genesis 3:19. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. There seems no doubt to me that bread holds a very special role in world cultures. It's also described as the nearly perfect product for human nourishment, which exists as a staple in pretty much all cultures of the world. And yet, when you think about it, bread is almost shunned from modern day culture with its anti-gluten tendencies. There seems to be a strange riddle going on here, so let's go and explore it today. Now, to do this, I wonder if you'd like to come for a little wander with me. We're going to go on a walk from the Font de Atzarro. It's a gorgeous, chilly but sunny April afternoon, and in about 40 minutes we can walk from here onto the San Carlos Road and walk west to the San Juan Road, and perhaps take in the red earth, those crazy yellow sprigs of wild fennel popping out all over the place, the spring flowers, the carob trees with their bright lime green coloured baby carob pods on them. And we're going to go to a little corner shop, perhaps is the word to describe it, on the San Juan Road, called Can Petit. Can Petit on the San Juan Road, where the queue is always long, the service is always slow, the social interactions always rich, wedged as you are in between your fellow shoppers, against shelves of pulses, olives and tuna in jars, tubs of Colacao drinking chocolate and bottles of wine. There's the tobacco stand at the end. Every type of loose-leaf tobacco pouch that is in existence is available for sale behind the counter of Can Petit. There is also the cheese counter, and not one, but two bread displays. And that is what takes my interest today. The one nearest to the counter is blue, gleaming, clean, hygienic, plastic. There's a Bimbo sign at the top of it, and endless products which, well, to me don't really resemble bread at all, but are different shapes and sizes, covered with gleaming plastic packaging, bearing colours of blue, red, white, purple. Our journey into bread has already taken us to a very strange place. Why is it that Western world's most common brand of bread is named after what the dictionary refers to as an attractive but unintelligent or frivolous young woman? Bimbo. In that case, this shiny blue Bimbo stand seems to promise fashion, fast-paced, high-speed efficiency, instant gratification, entertainment, fulfillment. But now my eyes veer off to the right, I see another bread stand of a very different type. This one made out of dark, polished wood. On one shelf, there are all different sizes of brown paper bags. On other shelves, there are different brown and beige objects, pastries of different sizes. And there they are, a section filled with large mounds of what definitely looks like local bread, packaged in that very lightweight aerated plastic with holes in it. It's difficult to see the names and the slogans and the writing on this almost transparent packaging, but I can just make out the words forn. Forn can buffi, forn can sans, forn can coves, forn esplat. Another thing which can just about be read is ingredientes. Harina, agua, masa madre. It seems that this mysterious second type of bread contains at most three ingredients: flour, water, masa madre, mother. It seems on our story of bread we've already encountered two different women, a bimbo and a mother. Somehow this woman, masa madre, speaks to me of age, time, slowness, darkness, heaviness, fermentation and mysteries. Yes, my choice is made. Out of Bimbo and Mother, let's take Mother. Whoever this Mother is, we're going in search of her today. So our journey into bread has started, and we're in search of this mysterious Masa Madre. So where do we go from here? I wonder whether we could perhaps explore this word forn, the bread oven of Catalonia. The word forn comes from the Latin fornus, but apparently the French word for oven is derived from the Latin fornicatio, in turn derived from fornix, which literally means a vault, but figuratively meant a prostitute. An online encyclopedia tells me that in ancient Rome, prostitutes fornicated with clients in vaulted rooms that resembled ovens. So this story of bread and of women seems to be leading to all sorts of strange themes of procreation. The process of loading, baking and unloading the oven is said to parallel copulation, pregnancy and childbirth. And of course, as we've just discovered, the leaven or the sourdough starter is often referred to as the mother in English and madre in Spanish. A little bit of investigation leads us to discover that bread symbolises the forces of life, and a strong element of eroticism is associated with its manufacture. Apparently there are fertility festivals around the world, including in Sicily, where breads in the shape of female genital organs were handed out during the celebrations. And of course we have the familiar expression, to have a bun in the oven, to be pregnant. Of course, this symbolically loaded vault of the bread oven, the forn, is a key feature of Ibethan architecture. Pretty much all of the traditional houses of the island have these swollen, whitewashed mounds attached to them, which add a lot of their beauty and their mystique. In our blind search for the essence of bread and the meaning of bread, let's go in search of a bread oven. why don't we walk south down the San Juan Road? And fairly soon we will come to the restaurant Espins, which was founded in 1970 by a local couple, Margarita and Juan, who built themselves a home beside the road and then over time added a modest bar. Margarita started to cook up the traditional stews and one-pot dishes that she learnt from her mother, and Juan specialised in making paella. And slowly over time their client base grew, the bar turned into a restaurant, and to this day they continue baking their own bread in the wood oven behind the restaurant, using the very same recipe and technique that was established by Margarita, the founder. Now, a little while ago, I braved myself to enter the strange labyrinthine series of rooms that is the backstage of the restaurant Espins to try and find the woman who makes the bread. My journey started when I went to the bar to ask for Katy, and I was directed to walk through the restaurant to the kitchen, where already at 9 o'clock in the morning there were infinite sources of alioli being stacked up on the counter and all sorts of fish and meat being slammed about and chopped about on large surfaces. I was shown through a kind of a tiled washing room where there was a woman washing a gigantic stack of potatoes in a huge saucepan, and she directed me to the back room, the hidden vault of Espins. In front of me was a huge flowery table where several women were frantically dusting down gigantic loaves of that famous Espins bread with what looked like a sturdy broom. Off to the left was a room whose sole purpose was to store the gigantic sacks of flour. And off to my right, there was a backyard filled with mainly a mountain of branches of pine, I suppose from the nearby forest, ready to be piled into the bread oven hour after hour. Amidst this frantic atmosphere filled with smoke, yeast, garlic and pine, I struggled to get a few words from Katy, the woman who is responsible for keeping the bread baking tradition of Espins going. And you will find that she is not a woman of many words, and I can't say that the conversation flowed so freely, partly because of her timidness, but also because she just seemed so incredibly busy in her early morning bread making shift. And thank you very much for the voiceover, which has been provided by Karen Colleen.
Vale, pues estoy en la cocina con el horno de leña.
Okay, so I'm in the kitchen beside the bread oven with the creators of the famous bread of Espins, who are, what was your name?
Yo, Carmen.
Y Katy. Muy encantada de estar aquí.
It's a pleasure to be here with you today. So, Katy, I would love to know a little bit about the history of this famous Espins bread. How did the tradition of making bread here start?
How did it start? Well, it was the grandmother, the old lady of the family. She started to make it and to sell it, and there you go.
And she taught you how to make it. She showed you the recipe.
Yes, yes, I learnt with her.
La receta es algo especial porque es un pan que la gente busca, ¿no? Por toda la isla.
Sí.
And is it a special recipe? Because it's a bread that people come for from all over the island. Does it have any particular special ingredient?
No.
El anís.
No.
The anís?
Oh, yes, the anís. Besides water and flour, that's it, basically.
¿Y el anís fue algo normal, común?
And was anís a typical ingredient in the bread of Ibiza, or was that the grandmother's idea?
No, era común, pero no era para cada día. Era para los días festivos, que ponían solo.
No, it was a common ingredient, but not for every day. It was used in the bread on festive days, celebrations, because it cost more money. It was put in the bread at Christmas, on slaughter days.
Entonces es como un pan de lujo, ¿no?
So really it's a luxury bread then?
Sí.
Yes.
¿Y el proceso de fabricar el pan, usan una masa madre?
And so in the process of making the bread, do you use a sourdough starter?
No.
No.
No. Entonces, ¿cómo se...?
Con la otra.
Then how does it rise?
With the other one. Brewer's yeast.
Cerveza. Y la harina es...
Ah, okay. And the flour? Is it a special flour?
No. No.
¿Y qué tal el proceso de fabricar el pan?
And so what about the act of making the bread? You're here every morning, Monday to Friday, from 6 to 10 a.m., and I imagine it's pretty full on, right?
¿Cómo es el... ahora llega más harina.
Oh, there's a flour delivery. If you need to go and deal with that, that's fine, no worries.
Veo que la harina viene de Mallorca, ¿no?
Sí.
Villa Franca.
Sí.
I see the flour comes from Mallorca, from Villa Franca.
Yes.
Pues, ¿nos puede contar un poco sobre el proceso entre las 6 y las 10 cada mañana?
So could you tell us a little bit about the process then, between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m. every morning, what happens?
Hacemos cada dos horas. Cada dos horas.
Well, we bake the bread every 2 hours, more or less. 1 hour fermenting, 1 hour in the wood oven. We take it out, we put it back in again, and that's how it goes.
¿Y más o menos cuántos panes salen del
oven? And more or less, how many loaves come out of the oven?
Hacemos unos 25 cada vez.
Well, we make about 25 each time, every baking session.
Entonces, en un día, en total sería como 50.
So in a day, you make about 50?
Sí, un poquito más de 50.
Yes, or a little more. If we have a lot of orders, we make more. Monday and Tuesday, for example, we bake less. On the weekend, perhaps we do 5 or 6 rounds.
Ahora hacemos 5, 6, o lo que del día.
Y hay clientes que vienen como toda la vida.
And are there the same customers who have been ordering the bread from Espins for many, many years?
Sí.
¿Conoce a alguna persona en particular?
Are there any particular regular customers that you can think of?
Sí, todos los vecinos de aquí tienen un día, cada martes, cada lunes, cada sábado.
Well, all the neighbors from around here, they each have a different day of the week when they come and collect their bread. Every Tuesday, every Monday, every Saturday. And then there are other people who come without ordering.
¿Como nuevas personas?
No, como nuevas o con la confianza de que habrá pan.
Ah, new customers?
No, regular customers, but ones who are hopeful there's going to be some bread left.
Vale. Aunque igual no hay.
Even though there might not actually be any bread left.
A lo mejor no hay, pero bueno.
Y el pan aquí, claro, se lo usa para más cosas, ¿no? Para varias.
So, the bread that is baked here is also used for some of the restaurant's dishes, right?
Es como ensalada. Las crostas como ensalada.
Yes, these crostas we use to make salad.
Ah, y los crostes para la gente que no saben qué es.
Oh, for the people who don't know what crostes are, could you explain?
Es un pan como duro que lo ponemos en el horno toda la noche.
Mm-hmm. It's pieces of very dry bread, which we've left overnight in the oven. In the morning, it ends up like this, really, really crispy. Then you soak it with a bit of water, you add tomato, tuna. But normally here we just add tomato and garlic, that's it. So, you soak the bread a little, and then you add finely chopped tomato and garlic. It's like a salad. In summer, people order this dish like crazy. It flies off the menu.
¿Y es divertido ese trabajo?
And do you enjoy this work?
Bueno, es pesadito. Es pesadito.
Well, actually, it's heavy going. Really heavy going.
Me imagino. Sí. Pero es un trabajo especial, ¿no?
I can imagine, but you have a very important job, I suppose, preserving this tradition which has been going on for 50 years, right?
Esto sí. Pues sí, casi sí. Yo llevo 25 aquí, ¿ya?
Yes, pretty much. I've been working here for 25 years, and before that, they'd been going for many years. Maybe not in such a commercial way, because there were less customers, but yes, the tradition has been going on for some time.
¿Usted es famoso en San Lorenzo, quizás?
Really, you're quite a famous figure in San Lorenzo, don't you think? Maybe?
Bueno, porque estoy trabajando aquí, porque si no, no.
Well, simply because I work here.
No. Tiene un papel muy importante.
You have a special role. I mean, a very special role. Anyway, I will let you get back to your work now, but thank you so much for speaking to me.
De nada. A vosotras.
You're welcome.
Esto lo podremos oír nosotros, lo podremos oír.
We'll be able to listen to this recording ourselves.
I remember now an anecdote that somebody once told me from their time spent travelling around in Colombia. They said that apparently a common phrase used by the girls of Colombia to refer in a derogatory manner to a boy that they don't find attractive is to say, tú eres un pan, you are a bread. And the reason behind this is because apparently it is very fashionable with young Colombian girls to not eat bread in order to maintain their svelte figure. And Because of this delightfully primal connection between eating and fornication, when a girl says to a boy, tú eres un pan, that means that she would not want to have sex with him. So strange how bread can traditionally be something so deeply sexual and yet in our modern times can be so deeply anti-sexual. Anyway, let's continue. We're heading further south now, but we're going to make a long detour, which, well, if we're walking, this is going to take many, many hours. We may have to find a ruined house to sleep in somewhere along the way. We're going up into the hills of Santa Ynez because we're going back a step to the place where traditionally the wheat grain was transformed into the product ready for grinding into flour to bake bread. We're heading to a threshing circle. So up here, the sky above us broad and blue, sitting in this ancient circle where the wheat was traditionally separated from the chaff by the farmers of Ibiza. And now I'm going to refer to another article by the same Diario de Ibiza journalist Miguel Ángel González called De la Siega y la Tria. And this article I will definitely translate and put on my Patreon in the next month or two. Miguel Ángel describes the traditional process of threshing for the people of Ibiza and says, the peasants or the country people made their own bread and had their own small plot of cereals. The harvest took place in June and then the wheat was threshed in July and August on the threshing floor. The small farms of the island were usually close to the farmer's home, but to make the most of the day's work, they would normally only interrupt the harvest with a frugal lunch of bread with sobrasada, which is the local cured pork and paprika sausage, and some olives and some wine, almost always beneath the shade of a fig or a carob tree. The men usually worked the harvest, but the women would often come to tie the bundles of wheat and collect the grain that got left behind. The threshing floors were circular platforms of 10 to 20 metres in diameter, raised to be ventilated. If a house didn't have one, they would go and use that of a neighbour's, always in return for some kind of item or service. And finally, Miguel Ángel adds a really lovely little detail and says that the threshing would normally be done on a waning moon so that the grain would be better conserved. But as we travel further and further back to the origin of the product of bread, still in search of this mysterious mother, this masa madre figure, we can't avoid the sacred aspect of threshing circles, because there's a strange magic up here in these places, and it's definitely backed up by folklore. Again, the encyclopedia tells me that farming has had a profound effect on the religious beliefs of agricultural communities, and the symbolism of wheat is deeply associated with the symbolism of bread. Cereal plants were associated with divinities in nearly all cultures, such as the Greek goddess Demeter and the Roman goddess Ceres. During its life cycle, the grain of wheat dies and is reborn months later in the form of a spike capable of providing sustenance to human beings. Wheat is the quintessential nutritional plant. It was believed to contain the mystery of life and death, and thus it became a sacred plant. And you could also say that, rather than the beaches of Ibiza, the place where traditionally sun worship has taken place has been up on these threshing circles. I continue. The sowing and harvesting of grain reflects a widespread veneration of the sun, which was regarded as the emblem of the creator amongst many peoples. The most common solar symbol was the six-prong rosette, which is found to this day on Irish maslin bread. And out of interest, and that solar symbol is in fact found in many different aspects of the folklore of Ibiza. But these threshing circles where wheat from the fields was transformed into the grain ready to become bread are also very connected with moon worship. The instrument used to cut the wheat is of course the sickle in the shape of a crescent moon. And it is said that in connection with grain, the sickle fulfills one of the functions of the moon, for the harvest ends a life cycle that begins with the death of the kernel of wheat. Like the scythe, the sickle serves as a positive end to the cycle, for it signifies the harvest and nourishment, both physical and spiritual. In Greece, threshing circles were not only sacred places, they were also performance places. You could almost say that they were the original theatre. And on this note, I want to make a little detour to talk about something that is very close to my heart as a puppeteer, searching for the optimum place to tell stories and perform on this island. Now, a little over 10 years ago, I went on an internship in Vermont, USA, with a very special puppetry company, which actually taught me the specific method of cardboard papier-mâché, which I rely on to this day. The Bread and Puppet Theatre, founded by the incredible Peter Schumann, who has been an active, passionately anti-capitalist puppeteer, performer, writer, director, musician, and circus maker since the 1970s. Now, there's a very particular reason for Bread and Puppet Theatre Company's name, and that is that the consumption of bread is an intrinsic part of their performance. Since the company first started performing their epic circus performances out in the field of their farm many decades ago, the tradition began of serving Peter Schumann sourdough bread with alioli at the start of every single performance. And on the days that I would wake up early during my time in Vermont, I would occasionally go for a walk around the farm and find Peter Schumann himself sat beside the bread oven, waiting for the day's bread to bake, already with a notepad in hand, frantically penning down his ideas for the day's events. And I'll share with you some words about his relationship with bread, which I think are really lovely as a way to explore this connection between bread and performance, which perhaps we can ponder while we're standing on this performative platform that is the threshing circle. An article that I discovered says, Schumann has been baking sourdough bread for 77 years since his childhood in Germany. He made it as a little boy with his mother and as a 10-year-old refugee of the war. Bread was a thing the family took seriously, Schumann says. It was the most desired object, to have enough for friends and family. The bread is made with rye flour, salt and water, to form a coarse and crusty loaf that requires effort to eat. It's a thing that reveals itself only when you work at it, Schumann says, when your teeth do their job. In 1963, when Schumann founded his theatre in New York City, the joining of bread and puppet was both obvious and necessary, he says. The two of them had to be married. They were very much engaged, he explains. We fed bread to the public, so they were chewing when they were watching the show. We thought that they were a better audience. If Schumann's bread takes work to digest, the same might be said of his theatre. It's not so good for the lazy mind that wants to be tickled or entertained, he says. Probably not so interesting. So, we can't stay too long up here on this hilltop threshing circle. We have to keep going south. We started with the loaf of bread in our hands up in the north. We went to a forn, to the oven. We went to the threshing floor, and now we need to go to the source itself, to the wheat field. But if we're really in search of this mysterious mother figure, this mother of all breads, perhaps we need to go in search of the mother of all ancient grains known to the Balearic Islands, the shaysha grain. This is a wheat grain which, with the passing of time, became almost obsolete, but in past times was known as the wheat grain of Ibiza, and in fact was seen as a luxury item. And in fact, it's even mentioned in a poem by the Majorcan poet Guillaume de Fac, who lived from 1929 to 1995, in his poem Canción de Son Coletes. There's a line which says, Els rics menjan pa de sheisha, y per noltros sols noia mestal, which translates as, the rich people eat sheisha bread, but we must suffice with mezcladizo, an inferior grain. In any case, sheisha, the mother of all grains, is alive today, thanks to the efforts of the local government and a new wave of Ibizan farmers, it's making a comeback. Now, back in December, I accompanied Joe Yule of Reset Rebel Productions, who taught me how to podcast in the first place. I accompanied her on a very special recording with four Ibizan female farmers for an episode that she was creating about seed sovereignty and the rise of female farmers on Ibiza. Now, it was thanks to that very special podcast episode created by Joe that I came into contact with Marina Cardona, one of the farmers being interviewed, and indeed one of the few farmers on Ibiza protecting, nourishing and giving new life to Ibiza's ancient Xeixa grain. I recently returned to her farm, the Finca Ecológica Campoville in San José, to ask her a little bit more about what reviving the seed means to her and what kind of labour of love is involved. The voiceover for this interview comes courtesy of Alex Gray. Estoy otra vez en el campo con Marina Cardona.
Once again, I'm in the countryside with Marina Cardona, and we're sitting in exactly the same meadow where that interview was recorded 3 or 4 months ago. So Marina is the founder of the organic farm Campoville. Hi, Marina. I'm so happy to be here in a field talking to you again.
Hola, muy buenas. Es un placer para mí también.
Hey there, how are you doing? It's a pleasure for me too.
Pues me llamó mucho la atención lo que tú dijiste en la última entrevista.
So what you spoke about in the previous Gang of Witches interview really drew my attention. You were talking about the motivation or the passion that drives your work here at Campoville. As a little bit of an introduction, could you tell us about this project and what you do?
Claro, claro que sí. Bueno, pues Campoville es una pequeña finca familiar.
Yes, yes, of course. Well, Campoville is a small family farm in the San José area of Ibiza, which was founded in 2016 with the overall aim of recuperating several abandoned pieces of farmland. The wonderful surprise that has come about through the recuperation of this land is that I have learned, or I am learning, and will never stop learning, a new profession, that of a farmer, and a profession which I have become very passionate about. I'm a total beginner, but I'm loving it. This opportunity to return to the roots of the island, of the land.
Me siento orgullosa porque la finca que hemos recuperado era una finca de mi abuela paterna.
I feel very proud because this piece of land belonged to my paternal grandmother. And like many pieces of land on the island, it became abandoned during that period when our older generations became swept up in tourism and no longer carried on with the agricultural way of life. So, as a young farmer, although I can't really say I'm that young anymore, I feel very proud to be recuperating these roots and connections with my ancestors, the people who were living here before tourism arrived.
Que habitaba antes de la llegada del turismo aquí a la tierra, a Ibiza. Campoville hacemos una agricultura lo más sostenible posible.
In Campoville, we farm in the most sustainable way possible. Our farming is based on biodiversity and organic produce. We produce a lot of summer crops. We also have a large asparagus plot, also several local varieties of figs.
Variedades también todo local y luego también estamos muy contentos que es lo menos productivo pero es al final esto lo haces un poco desde el corazón de trabajar con las variedades locales.
And additionally, well, although they are not the most productive of our crops, we are very proud of the special local varieties that we put our heart into growing here. White peppers, we call them, and the orizo melon. And we also have a large plot of Xeixa, which is a grain originating from these islands.
Y vamos a hablar mucho más sobre la Xeixa pronto. Pues lo que me interesó mucho de ti fue tu interés en los, digamos, antepasados de Ibiza y de tu tierra.
And we're going to talk a lot more about Xeixa very shortly. Well, what really interests me about you as a farmer is your investment in, shall we say, the ancestors of Ibiza and your piece of land. And this seems very connected with your other job as an occupational therapist with elderly people. Could you say something about that?
Sí, sí, por supuesto. Bueno, pues yo me formé como terapeuta ocupacional en Barcelona.
Yes, of course. Well, I trained as an occupational therapist in Barcelona, specializing in cognitive stimulation, neurological rehabilitation, above all for the people who suffer some kind of cognitive deterioration, like Alzheimer's or some types of dementia. And for the last 17 years, on and off, my work has been focused in this work with elderly people. And I feel honored to have been able to listen to these people share their stories and reflections with me over the years.
Pues me han ido contando cosas olvidadas, ¿no? Bueno, pues como terapeuta ocupacional he trabajado esos 17 años en un hospital de demencias, personas que sufren un deterioro cognitivo, ¿no? Donde la memoria y su persona, pues por esta enfermedad se va borrando poco a poco.
For much of that time, I've worked here on the island in a hospital for the elderly, focusing my work on people with dementia and Alzheimer's, individuals who have suffered some kind of cognitive deterioration, which erases their memory, and somehow, little by little, erases their personality. And over that time, well, they share with me this stream of information and recollections which perhaps they forget. But me, Marina, I get to retain all of that information.
Entonces, por mi parte, pues yo, con este cariño especial a la tierra y al legado Ibicenco.
So me, with this special affection that I have for the land of Ibiza and its legacy, I think I feel that way because of all the people who have shared their stories with me over the years through my work. So, all of that cultural transmission, I feel it is so important to hold on to it and preserve it.
Eso junto a mi abuela paterna, que actualmente tiene 94 años y le tengo pues muchísimo respeto.
That, alongside my grandmother, who right now is 94 years old, and I have huge respect for her and all people of that generation, because they have lived through different, very hard life circumstances. And I think they have great courage, truly. So, all of that is what gave me the initial push, really, to create Can Pouville. To come closer to all of that heritage that has been passed on to me by these people throughout my life.
Me encanta ese vínculo entre tus dos trabajos muy diferentes.
Wow, I love that. I love that connection between your two different professions, which might initially seem very separate from each other. So let's talk about the Xeixa grain. Was it around 3 years ago that the Conseil Insular, the government of Ibiza, delivered to Campoville a quantity of Xeixa seeds? And what exactly was it that they proposed to you?
Pues mira, sí, hace cuestión de 3 años el Conseil hizo una promoción muy importante, yo creo, para lo que es la recuperación de la semilla.
Well, around 3 years ago, the government of Ibiza put a lot into promoting the recuperation of this seed. They collected the seed from a couple of farms on the island, which to this day had never once stopped cultivating the grain, mainly for personal consumption, small families coming from a farming tradition who had never stopped growing that crop for themselves. So the government bought, say, 200 kilos of the seeds, planted them and basically tripled them.
Con esta semilla, lo que han hecho una vez triplicada, lo ha repartido a lo largo a diferentes países que estábamos dispuestos a cultivar este tipo de trigo.
And then they distributed these seeds between various farms which would be able to cultivate them on the condition that all of the grain wouldn't be sold each year as grain. We needed to always preserve and collect the grain for the following year. So we made sure the variety would never be lost.
Eso se hace mucho en todo lo que es el tema de las variedades locales. La suerte de tener una variedad local, por eso es tan importante, es el hecho de que no son semillas modificadas genéticamente.
This is basically what is done with all local seed varieties to preserve them. We are so lucky to have these seeds, which aren't at all genetically modified. During the Industrial Revolution, they developed these crops, such as the typical common processed wheat, which is very high in gluten, not at all easy to digest, and nutritionally it's very poor. But they developed this kind of crop to sustain the population at a time when perhaps they felt it was needed.
Entonces, yo diría que el trigo convencional, el modificado genéticamente, ¿no? La harina está blanca, será el, no me atrevo a decir, el 30 o 40% mucho más productivo que el Black Xeixa.
So I would say the standard genetically modified wheat is maybe 30 to 40% more productive than the Xeixa grain. Therefore, over time, they stopped cultivating it. In the post-war years, well, we needed a lot of bread. The Xeixa grain was not that productive, so they brought in a GM seed from off the island, which was a lot more productive. But the thing is, the farmer wouldn't be able to keep reproducing this crop year after year. They had to keep buying it.
Por suerte, ahora estamos en otro momento de la vida. La gente está empezando a valorar más la importancia nutricional.
Luckily, you know, now we are in a new era. People are starting to value nutrition and health over quantity, such as our focus at Campoville, where we are more focused on quality. I always say we are trying to nurture and harvest health more than any specific product. My emphasis is on quality and producing the healthiest possible produce. This is why we are cultivating Xeixa. It's not so productive, but it's incredible on a nutritional level and also with the fact that it is very low in gluten and therefore much easier to digest.
Me interesa cómo Sheisha parece que no fue muy productivo.
What interests me is that if Sheisha wasn't seen as very productive in the era when it was grown here, I wonder what its role was in Ibizan culture. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Ancestral de Ibiza. ¿Tienes alguna opinión sobre eso?
Bueno, mira, yo como he dicho, bueno, yo cuento lo que sé, ¿eh? Y seguro que hay gente en Ibiza que sabe mucho más de esto.
Well, like I said before, I can only share my thoughts and opinions, and I'm sure there are others who know more about this than me. But what I will say is that the typical peasant bread, pan payés, of Ibiza, the big round loaves which have a very solid, not at all spongy texture, and would typically last a lot longer than modern types of bread, up to 10 days even. Well, that original island bread was made with the Sheisha grain. It was a darker bread, made with the whole of the grain.
Con la sémola, digamos, con la piel. Luego, pues eso, pues llegó la guerra pasaron mucha hambre y de repente llegó eso, la revolución industrial, llegó el hambre, ¿no? Ya no había tanto hambre, pero apareció el pan blanco. El pan blanco, pues ellos siempre habían comido pan moreno, el pan blanco, pues existía la creencia, ¿no?, de que era mejor.
Well, then the war happened, and of course hunger, economical hardship, the revolution of industry, and in the end, perhaps even when hunger wasn't an issue, people began to prefer white bread. It was something special that came from off the island, from the mainland. It was more productive. It was this lovely, white, spongy texture. So little by little, the original island bread was eliminated. I'm saying all of this on the basis of what elderly people have told me. I haven't read it in any book. It might be true or not, but it's what I've been told through my work as an occupational therapist.
Y bueno, y poco a poco, ¿no?, se fue quitando este tipo de trigo. ¿Qué os cuento más sobre el Black Sheisha? Luego había un sistema muy, muy curioso de cultivarlo, ¿no? La gente...
What else can I tell you about Sheisha? There was this really interesting system for cultivating it. These older generations had their little plot of land where they grew the crop. And you see, wheat as a crop absorbs a lot of nutrients from the earth it is grown in. So what they used to do was this. One year, they would plant the wheat, in this case, the Sheisha.
Siguiente año, cultivaban forraje para los animales.
The following year, they would grow fodder for the animals, usually including some kind of legume, which are very good for oxygenating the soil. And then the third year, they called the cultiva, which would mean they would bring up their flock of sheep onto this plot of land, and the animals would spend half a year or so on this plot, you know, eating the crop, shitting, and that's how the plot would be filled with nutrients over a three-year cycle.
El animal pasaba pues todo medio año, digamos, en esa parcela de tierra y comía y cagaba, lógicamente, entonces eso hacía que se abonase. Entonces eran como tres ciclos, ¿no? Era como Black Sheisha, el forraje para los animales se segaba.
The Sheisha grain first, then the animal fodder, then they put the animals onto the land. And in this very natural and respectful way, they maintained the land without depleting it. It seems very intelligent to me.
Vuelo sin agotarlo. Me parece una cosa muy inteligente.
Qué súper bien planeado.
And how very well planned.
Sí, sí, sí. Son cosas sencillas, ¿no?
Yes, yes. And in the end, what we are returning to now is what our ancestors used to do. Today, if you pick up any book about regenerative farming, this is exactly what it will talk about.
Ahora poco a poco nos estamos dando cuenta que tenemos que ir bajando el consumo de cereal.
Now, little by little, we are realizing that we need to lower our gluten intake. But imagine, back in the days when it was hard to get hold of meat or fish in the post-war years, well, bread and grains, I can imagine, were valued in a different way.
Mirando como los varios cultivos que tenéis en Campoville.
Looking at the different crops that you grow at Campoville, how do you see the Sheisha grain? What does it represent to you?
Para mí es lo que más trabajo me da.
Well, for me, it's the crop that gives me the most work. It gives me the most work and causes me the most suffering. It's a crop that needs a lot of water, and it seems that these days there is less and less rain. You know, every morning I open my bedroom window to let the light in, and the first thing I see is the shisha crop, and every day it seems to be turning more yellow, and I think, oh goodness, please let it rain. Another reason why it's the most labor-intensive crop is that we mill it ourselves with a stone mill. I mean, it's mechanical, it's electric, but it's this small little mill.
Proceso del trigo es, lo sembramos entre noviembre y diciembre.
The process of harvesting the shisha is, we sow it between November and December. Me, personally, I do this thinking of the weather and climate, hoping for rain. Once you've sown the seeds, you pray that the tórtulas, the little doves that are common here, don't eat half of the seeds that you've put into the earth. You pray for rain, that the crop will grow fine, and that the wheat will grow. Then, okay, you're praying to the gods that it will rain, and now that the wheat is growing, the birds come back again.
De nuevo vuelven los pájaros. Vale, pues entonces cuando el grano ya ha madurado, pues se cosecha. Normalmente en este caso viene una segadora.
So when the crop is mature, it is harvested. We bring in a machine to do it, and they pile the wheat up somewhere. In our case, we don't have a threshing floor, so we put it in the back of a tractor. There, it needs to be dried. A threshing floor would be ideal because you can really spread it out, but we dry it in this kind of wagon and on top of plastic sheets, with the sun drying it in the daytime, and then we cover it at night.
Vale. Cuando ya lo tenemos seco, lo pasamos por una ventadora que se llama.
When it's dry, we use a kind of fan to separate the husks from the grains or the wheat from the chaff. And if there's the odd stone or snail, leaf or branch, well, it gets rid of them too. Then we store it away from light, away from the sun, and in an airless space.
Nosotros lo almacenamos, lo guardamos en una zona sin luz. Vale, pues una vez que tenemos este grano en los bidones.
So once we have the grain in these containers, every time that I have an order, I go and take a batch of grain. I check it over for stones and things, and then I mill it with our stone mill.
Semillitas, a veces se cuela alguna pedrita que todo este proceso que os he contado, pues no lo ha pasado, ¿no? Y lo muelo con el molinito de piedra.
Wow, sí. Eso es un viaje.
Entonces,
épico.
Claro, sí, yo qué sé, pues eso, no.
Wow. Yes. What can I say? I mean, for me personally, it's something I will continue producing. To continue this legacy with the land, it's a seed that was grown by our ancestors, and I don't want it to be lost. It's not currently economically sustainable, but nutritionally, on a personal and on a family level, it's worth it. Personally, I support it 100%.
Luego hay una cosa muy bonita, ¿no? Que yo descubierto mi nuevo mundo, ¿no? El mundo está de la agricultura.
And aside from that, there's a lovely thing which has happened to me in parallel with this journey into agriculture. I may have mentioned this in the other podcast, but Campouville was born at the same time as I became a mother to a beautiful little boy, my son, Eric. So, at the same time as I became a mother to a piece of land, I have learnt how to look after a piece of land and my son at the same time.
Entonces, el hecho de, en este caso, ¿no?, de mi hijo, que conozca todo el proceso, que él cuando hay que sembrar, lo siembra.
So the fact that my son has got to know this whole process. He knows when it's time to sow the crop. When it rains, he says, Mama, look, the shisha will be so happy. The fact that before we make a pizza, we go and we mill the flour together. To give this opportunity to my son is just as important to me as giving fertility to this piece of land.
De darle esa posibilidad a mi hijo, la verdad.
Eso me da esperanza para el futuro, sí. Las futuras generaciones. Wow.
Hearing this gives me hope for the future and for the future generations. What hopes do you have over the future role of the shisha grain on Ibiza?
En Ibiza.
Jo, pues yo muy buenas, la verdad, porque hay otros compañeros que están produciendo mucha cantidad.
Well, I have high hopes, to be honest, because I know people who are producing it in large quantities. It's becoming very commercialized in local bakeries, for example. I mean, 3 years ago, no one knew anything about Shesha, and now I think in any bakery that makes its own bread, you will find Shesha product.
Tenemos la suerte también en Ibiza de contar con grandes cocineros, ¿no? Y cocineras, grandes chefs y gente que conoce mucho el valor.
On Ibiza, also, we're lucky to have some amazing chefs and people who are very passionate about quality gastronomic ingredients. So in many restaurants like Esfental in San Antonio, David Reart and many more know the shisha grain, love it and incorporate it into their dishes.
Y luego volvemos a lo mismo, o sea, ese trigo blanco que, por ejemplo, el pan Bimbo este.
And going back to the Bimbo type bread, the mass-produced white bread, well, every day it seems more people have intolerances to gluten, to such processed flours. So I think that in general, consumption of flour has gone down, but the consumption of high-quality flour has gone up. I think a lot of growers like me are really enthusiastic about producing the grain, and some are even starting to bring back other ancient Ibizan varieties too. As long as there are consumers who care about their nutrition and health, I think this interest will keep growing.
Siempre que haya consumidores que quieran respetar su cuerpo y su alimentación, continuará este legado.
¿Me puedes enseñar el pequeño?
Are you going to show me your little shisha crop then?
Claro que sí, claro que sí. Ahora vamos.
Yes, of course, let's go.
I'm remembering now the route that we have travelled together, you and I, from these two different bread displays in a little grocery shop called Can Petit. We chose the naked, understated simplicity of flour, water and masa madre. We went in search for the mother. We looked for her in a bread oven fired by pine branches every day for 50 years, but she wasn't there. We detoured via a threshing circle where life meets death, earth meets sky, the everyday and essential meets the sacred and the performative, until finally we headed south. And we came to a woman tending a plot of water-hungry ancient shisha grain. Tending the few remaining seeds of a culture that once was. Tending the words and memories of the generations that have passed. And also, tending a small son who will take all of these things and more with him on his road ahead. The story of bread started with flour, water and masa madre, the mother. And at our story's destination, we found our mother once more. And on the subject of life and renewal, I told you that I'd give you an update about the spring of Azzaro drying out over the winter. I'm just going to move my foot slightly.
D'allò et vas despedint com si ho fosses de revista i pegues per altre vent a percurar-te alegria.
You've been listening to The Wells of Tanit, created by me, Joanna Ruby. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please help to spread the word and leave us a review on iTunes, as this really helps the podcast to be found by more people. You can support this project by joining my online Patreon community, where you will receive monthly creative writings, translations, essays and artistic offerings which take you even deeper into the culture of Ibiza and the secrets of its ancient wells. Go to patreon.com/JoannaRuby and you'll find this link in the text accompanying this episode. The theme music is the song De Joed Vas Despidient by the Ibizan folk group Uk, released by Producciones Blau.
I sé que no et sé ni et veig, que això et content algun dia.
això no t'abandon i has de pensar que t'oblidi que dins mon cor repeteix lo que em deies aquell dia. Sempre t'apreciaré i on s'afulla que sigues només per dar-te entenent que de tu estic agraït.